The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. With me in studio today are certified financial planners, Stephen Lucan and Tony Payne. Hey guys, glad to be here with you again today.
It's
another
been a
discussion.
While.
Yeah, right.
We're finally getting
into
a groove here. I'm excited about this one. This is a little bit of an emotional topic, so we've got some really good expertise in both of you to be able to provide hearty tips and strategies for this. We're talking about diminished capacity. A lot of people aren't familiar with the term, so I kind of want to define it first and then go into how we recognize it. So, Stephen, you want to start first?
Well, again, it is a great topic. I'm glad Tony's here because I usually bounce off of him some ideas and thoughts. He's really good at it.
Well, hey, we talk together, though.
Yes, we chat about it. But diminished capacity is really preparing for the elder years, or even it could be earlier based on medical conditions or whatnot. But it's when you may lose some of your mental capacities, physical capacities, basically being able to run your day-to-day life that you're used to. So it's sort of preparing for the later years when you may not be able to function when you were in a normal state.
So my brain immediately, as in every person, my brain goes to severe elderly situation, but you don't think about things that could happen to a younger person or a middle-aged person that could, you know, require the same kind of attention on the financial planning side.
No, it's really important. I mean, I think it's easier to jump to the elders. I mean, that's one we can identify with. But then the other side is, I might just have a surgery. I might be on meds. I might be a little out of it for a month or so. I've got big decisions to make, things that need to be done. I'm at a diminished capacity. Even then, for that month or so that I'm recovering or dealing with stuff, where I'm not all there. You know, if you've ever went to sign something really important at somewhere fun, I'm thinking those condos or timeshares.
Right.
Sometimes they'll even ask you, have you been drinking? Are you able to do this? That's a diminished capacity too.
Yeah.
So when you think about, are you in the right state to be able to sign something, that's probably the non-legalese way to say it.
Now you know why I talked to Tony about these things, right? Because you think the normal stuff. You think the worst case scenario, elder years. But as Tony pointed out, there's a lot of normal day-to-day stuff that it could affect us.
So, and it sounds like to me it can be either you or a perceived notion of someone else that you care about, depending on how you're looking at it, right? So it could be, you know, I'm going through surgery. Your life is flashing before your eyes, been there. You know, you're trying to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. But then what about other people that you live with? You might notice things in them too. So, and we'll get to that later. But there's a lot more to the conversation than I think people realize when we really start having the conversation.
And it's also truly not just emotional, but there's a lot of underlying fears and issues with it that are real. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about, what does it mean if someone says I have a diminished capacity? Mm-hmm. That can be really scary.
Yeah.
So that's the other parts that we'll talk through here is, what does it really mean? What are the implications? And how do you make sure that you have someone looking out for you?
And Tracy, yeah, you nailed it. It's prepare for the worst, hope for the best, right? And a lot of what financial planning is you're preparing for the worst. Death, disability, when your income stops, what are you going to do? So you prepare for that day, and then you hope it doesn't come to fruition. But life happens, right? We all know that.
I hope I'm not stretching too far, but you know I love history.
Mm-hmm.
If we think about history and the way our country's set up even, I mean, our country basically has a diminished capacity almost provision in it. It's when the president, something happens, the vice president takes over.
Right.
There's a clear line of succession. That's important. I mean, you think about when President Reagan was shot, President Bush was able to step up for a few days there while he was going through surgery and everything. Right. I mean, that's a diminished capacity to the extreme. He was able to recover, get back to work, do what he needed to. But in the middle there, someone had to step in and make some really critical decisions with all that stuff that was going on with the Soviet Union back then.
Yep.
I mean, you had to have somebody willing right then and able to say, I'm empowered.
Yep.
And that's what we're talking about in your lives.
So a secession plan.
To a degree, yes.
For diminished capacity. Sense,
Yeah. Your CFP brains just exploded when I said that.
Right?
No, you're on it.
I just saw the squirrels running rampantly. Every person said something that I might not might not work. All right, let's talk about legal documents. What kinds of first steps do people take? And I'm not sure if we want to approach this from the single, you know, the individual or from the caregiver person. How do you want to take this one?
Yeah, it really depends.
Go ahead, Tony, you start.
Right? No, I think. Really depends on where you're at in your life. So, I mean, really, I think we need to cover both. What's logical? What happens first? You're the younger one. If you're blessed to have parents with you, they're aging. Maybe it's grandparents, they're aging. So I think that's probably the first role most people encounter this in is as a caretaker. Or maybe they're dealing with someone who's just on the beginning side of having a diminished capacity. So when you're thinking about what documents or what might I need to have, I mean, first, if it's mom or dad, ask them, what documents do you have?
Right.
If I'm clearly the one that may be taking over trying to help you out, what do you have?
Right. And those generally start with the estate plan. Okay. Right. The basic is the estate planning documents. The estate planning attorney will help draft those. That's the broad, I guess, the broad scope, right, that you have the power of attorney, the durable power of attorney for health care, living will, the will. And then you have to see, okay, what roles does that provide to the person who is the agent or named in those documents, from signing tax returns, bank accounts, opening bank accounts, even making trades or distributions. There's so what do you need to have accomplished, right? That's part of the what do we have to look after. So there's so many variables. Even talking to the insurance agent, there's so many variables that you have to worry about. But it starts with the basic estate planning of documents.
And that power of attorney you mentioned, whether it's durable, springing, the one for health care, basically what we're saying is that's a document that if I'm incapacitated but I'm still alive, someone else can work on my behalf. Maybe I'm healthy and I'm just out of town traveling and I give someone a power of attorney to file my tax return while I'm gone. Or I'm disabled, I'm really laid up in a coma for years, someone's got to file those returns, get things done. That's also that power of attorney document. It's super powerful. I mean, if Stephen gave me one, I can pretend to be Stephen, go out and rent out some library books in your name, maybe not return them.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A lot of responsibilities.
But that's the serious point of it is, like you see with even the examples with professional athletes and stuff like that, where they grant power of attorney to somebody and then they squander their money. There's no law being broken. That's the problem, is there's no law being broken. That's how powerful that document is. So you got to be very careful with it. But going back to our scenario, we said, okay, parents, we're going up the chain, up the line, worrying about our parents or grandparents and saying, do you have your documents in place just in case of that elder diminished capacity kicking in and just to have things covered there? So IDs, passwords, everything under the sun, you want to have that documented and backed up.
And those are tough conversations to start. A lot of people don't want to have those conversations. We encourage people to get real, you know, with their situation, no matter what age you are. But, you know, can happen at any age. You're in the hospital and something takes place and you don't have your power of attorney there. Somebody else is making the decisions, right?
Right. With anything, and when it comes to financial planning, is you do it when times are good. When you don't have to worry about it. I always say do it now. Avoid the double tragedy.
Great point.
Right? Something happens tragically to someone you love. They're incapacitated. Now we don't have anything, no documents completed. What are your priorities? Your priorities are your loved ones, not some piece of paper. So get all that everything lined up when times are good.
To paint that picture too, if you heard what Stephen said, you go, oh, okay, let's paint that, everything you said.
Yeah.
I was speaking with a bank teller just the other day, and she was asking me, hey, do I have these things in order? I was able to happily say, yes, you've got it all done. But she had encountered a family that had come into the bank. Their elderly family member was incapacitated. They need to pay the property taxes for the house. The children didn't have the money. Mom has the money. It's in her account. They go to the bank. They say, hey, we need to take care of this. Mom's in the home. Things are happening. The bank, first thing, they send a compliance and a bank manager. Okay, we need a copy of a power of attorney, that exact document you referenced. And not only that, what does it say? What does it allow? Can they open accounts? Can they close accounts? Can they withdraw money? Thankfully, that information was there after a lot of heartache for this family. They had to go around and find it and come back to the bank. And that was what scared the heck out of her to say, I would never want my family to be in this scenario where you could possibly lose the house even by not making the property taxes, even though the house was paid off.
Yeah.
It can get pretty layered with red tape if you don't have all the things in place.
And most people, when you're a married couple, you can get a little laxed with it because you have a backup of each other.
That's actually something interrupting you.
Yeah.
I've heard two different stories, not from you guys. I've never really pointedly asked you guys at the office. But when you have a couple, and let's say there's one child or, you know, two children, I would assume everything is without probate. The ownership of the remaining spouse in the sense
not always
when the first spouse passes away,
not always.
But that's the assumption. I'm not articulating, but that's the assumption that I've had this conversation with somebody where I remember saying I don't know that that's really true. If you don't still have power of attorney and a living will and so forth set up for your spouse, I don't know that that's true.
Yeah, I would argue that it might be easier to reconcile that situation over a death versus an incapacity, right? Where somebody dies, you have the death certificate, you can say, okay, let's facilitate this through the courts. But if someone's incapacitated, that could drag out even longer.
Wow.
That's why it's so valuable or important to anyone's financial plan.
Right. I mean, the scenario you're describing, too, when you think about it, the documents are the key. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that we're married or we may have that ability to say, hey, I'm the spouse, recognize me. Well, they may recognize you, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a lot more hoops to jump through that you may have been able to avoid if you had everything in order.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So financial checkups. How often do you, sit down? Let's say you have the estate plan drawn up and you're wanting to evaluate where everything sits. You do that semi-annually, annually. Let's talk about that.
I would start with make sure you know who's included. Make a list, a summary. Here are the people involved in my life in that their roles and responsibilities. And then anytime there's a major life event, you review it. A major life event, a birth, a death, a marriage, a divorce, goes across the board. But even a capacity issue where you may have your parents assigned to assist you. But now it might be the kids. It might down the river, right? You might swing the pendulum to the younger generation when they're in their 30s or 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point.
And I think you guys both know it, but I'll share here. I try to avoid some of the stories. But when I was in 2015, we found out my grandmother was diagnosed early onset dementia. And at that point, she was a primary caretaker for my grandfather. I mean, she was helping with everything aside from the finances, basically. And when that happened, we needed to scramble to really say, how can we get things in order so they can keep living the great life they've been living, doing all the great things they've been doing, have that great quality of life, but also allow her time to retire, have a break. I mean, a lifetime of being that, not servant, but the type of traditional grandmother that you love that's just always doing everything. Mm-hmm. And now it was time to pay it back. And that was when I was able to go out there and help and really on the ground do my learning of what do I got to get from the attorney? What do I need to do at the bank? What do we have to do with the VA? What do we have to do with home health care people? What are some of the things to watch out for? Some of that I just learned as we were doing it and through some trial and error. But the idea of when you have lived this and you're going through it, there are people involved. And the idea that you just have time to go chase down three attorneys, get different quotes. No, you're probably working. You might have kids or family yourself. You're trying to take care of those elders. And maybe there's a specific person they want you to work with. Maybe they had their own network. It's not as easy as just saying, oh, give me the documents. If there aren't the documents, then you've got to create them. And that was the first step for us.
Even when the documents are in place, the let's say you're going to the bank has to have the protocol to say, okay, Tony has power of attorney. That could take days to get authorization and maybe even a week or two before that's even accepted. So that's why, again, have everything lined up when times are good versus times are bad, because even with the proper documentation, the execution and just getting everything approved can be a bit stressful. And because, again, your priorities are with your loved ones, right, not with the piece of paper. So,
right. So annually?
I think.
Or as needed.
Well, really annually, but I don't want to stretch too far. That's the benefit, I think, of what we do.
Right. We're forcing people to go through it annually.
Right.
Well, but, I mean, I've talked to a few people in this role, and I get the impression from some people that financial planning is a one-and-done thing. And that's a big mistake to approach your financial plan. There's no cookie cutter, pat you on the head, take your toys, pat you on the head, send you out the door, see you in a year. It doesn't work that way, because life ebbs and flows. I think we're all petri dishes of that. Mm-hmm. And we try to reinforce that. And I think you guys, you know, we offer at least four meetings a year when we talk to clients.
So we do cover things, right? We say cover it once a year. Just review. That's why I say have that summary of the people who are involved in it. But I'll tell you, you'll say, well, we just looked at it, and then it'll be like 3 years down the road because, no, we didn't just look at it. These documents were done, you know, a long time ago. So time flies, right? So don't try to come up with a calendar event or something, holiday or something. But you should at least once a year take a look at it.
Yeah,
those family friends you had a falling out with, those kids who got a little older, maybe did not turn out as you might have liked. There's all kinds of things that change. The realities are out there. We know it. Mm-hmm. So that's why looking at it annually is probably best.
Yeah. And then as well as, like I said, the major life events.
Yeah.
Right. So there's things happen. Life happens.
Yeah, birth, death.
Yeah.
You could have it all aligned, and then tomorrow something jukes another direction, you've got to reface it, right?
Yep.
So we've been talking a little bit about finance professional team. We're part of a professional team. So when someone is approaching that specific part of their financial plan, diminished capacity, what is the team? What's his team look like besides the financial planner? Attorney? Mm-hmm. Is there a specific kind of an attorney?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, a specialist in elder care is usually best, especially when you're dealing with those issues specifically.
Yeah.
Now, what you may have encountered or also could be possible, if you had an ongoing relationship with an attorney or a firm, they may have another specialist in their office. That may be something that they know about that they've just never talked to you about. But that's something to ask ahead of time when you're building a relationship with a professional. What happens if I need this other realm? I'm using you right now for my will. What happens if I did have a dementia or something? Would you be available? Who can help me in your office? I think these are great questions to ask ahead of time. And I don't want to overlook the medical people here either. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may not be speaking to the financial people directly, and that's really where things can break. I know you and I have talked about that, you know, because of privacy, because of the way rules work sometimes, as much as we'd want to be there and handhold people all the way through, you have to have that trusted person, whether it's a family member, a friend, and I know that can be harder for some, but the idea is you have to have that independent, trustworthy person in your life to make it a lot easier. And if you don't, you can still do things. You've got to have a lot more documents, and you're still leaving a little to chance there.
Right, and it could extend to accountants, right? Whether it's your bank, the one that popped into my head immediately, a trustee, right? If you're, let's say you don't have kids or don't have anyone to support or help you emotionally, and you go into an assisted living facility, who's going to pay the bills? How are the bills going to get paid? Are they robbing you? I hate to use that word, but, right, are they taking advantage of you financially? So a trustee, even if it costs a lot of money, it's probably worth it just to have somebody looking out. That's their job. Mm-hmm. They're getting paid to do that job to pay the bills.
And as fiduciaries, that's why it's so important to us to bring up this topic, because for someone to have a diminished capacity, and we're saying those words, but again, how else can I say it aside from you're at your weakest? You're vulnerable. You're a part of that vulnerable population that could be taken advantage of. Not in your best days. You know you wouldn't fall for that when you're paying attention. But when you're laid up after a few months of going through stuff, that's what we're talking about. And that's when, you know what? when do you say when? When do you let someone know, mm-hmm. hey, I'm not the same, or I don't feel the same? That's really difficult.
Ooh. And when you have severe diminished capacity, a lot of financial mistakes are made. I've heard some terrible stories about just credit cards and just spending that's abnormally. Right. And you're not, that's not the person's there, but that's what diminished capacity is. You're not on a clear plane that you once were,
right.
And you make some bad decisions. And so financially, it could be a problem.
Right.
Even something, and again, we say all these horror stories, and sometimes they're really important to hear them to scare us a little straight sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you imagine the old days where someone would call you randomly, pretend to be a relative, ask you for money. Think about today.
Yeah.
You can use AI to have Stephen's voice call you even almost. Yeah. I mean, unless you are really with it and paying attention sometimes, the things these voice things can do as well, you want to have that person almost helping you to say, oh, is this really for the driveway? Is this a gift? Or is someone just working and they really aren't going to show up? I mean, those are the kinds of things where you're really
subject to. They're so good at it, too. They're so,
it's terrible.
You see it all the time on the news, right? The AC repair or whatever. That's not really repairing or driveway or roof or.
I saw a study.
The good ones are punished by it, but that's where we are.
And the sweet spot for the fraudsters was that $2,000 to $20,000 amount. Almost not enough where you had to go through a bunch of hoops.
Mm-hmm. What is that? I don't know what that is.
For fraud.
The cost.
So
right. What are they asking for?
$20,000. So how much are they going to basically steal from you?
Oh.
So again, they're not going to ask for $100,000 or $200,000. That usually gives people pause.
Oh, I see what you
mean. But when they say, hey, I'll redo the driveway, I'll be out, our company will be out, we'll redo the roof. It's a terrible scheme. And it's people walking through neighborhoods, so there's no license plates, no real business listed. It's basically just an old school fraudster going out using some new technology sometimes, maybe having a fake website or something. And again, you are very well intentioned. You're with it. You're trying to do right. And this person comes by and they give you a great deal and they seem trustworthy. It is hard to say, I don't know if this is a fraud or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, that's hard for anybody,
right.
Let alone if you have a diminished
capacity.
It's
hard to turn people away when they're on your doorstep. If you are a people pleaser type personality, it's very easy to fall into a conversation with people, especially, somebody who's a little older and maybe lonely and wants to talk to somebody, right? That's very easy to happen.
Yep.
But the other part of it that I experienced with my father was that I was relieved about is when we went to see an attorney. My father had Parkinson's disease, and he hadn't yet embarked on the diminished capacity aspect of it, and was wanting to revert a will back to its original form before somebody convinced him to change it.
Okay.
Years before, I'll just say that. And what I liked about the attorney was the attorney made me sit outside. Red flag. If the attorney doesn't say, hey, advocate, you get to sit out in the lobby and wait while I talk to the client, there might be something wrong. If the attorney is allowing you into the office without talking to the
persuasion.
Person. Right.
Yep.
So I liked that he was protecting my dad. And I think that, and I didn't know anything about it at the time, but I thought, well, that's a good safeguard, in place for other people as well. So that's something to think about.
Very good point.
Yeah.
And that, and maybe the opposite scenario, and it sounds like you guys were trying to do it the right way, if things had gone too far and he perhaps couldn't even go in there, now we're stuck. Now we're in that position we were describing earlier.
When you wait too long.
Right. So it's okay to go in there and maybe, hey, I'm okay. I'm with it here. I don't need this now, Tracy, but I'm going to go in there and humor you a little. That's the great steps. And when you can communicate with people and have that relationship, that's how hopefully we can avoid that double tragedy. Because, again, we're all people.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, something miserable is going to happen to all of us, not to be a downer here, but it's the reality of it.
Well, I like the segue because my next question is about, it makes my hackles go up bringing it up, but we should talk about it, and that's elder abuse. So how do you protect yourself or your loved ones from financial fraud, which is considered elder abuse? Let's tell people what elder abuse is.
All right, go. You can start with that. The first thing that popped into my head it's not just outside. It could be family, too.
That's right.
That's the scary part about it. Siblings, you talk about persuasion.
Yeah.
Right? The kid breaks out the violin and starts playing the violin for mom and dad, and they're cutting checks for him while the siblings are like, where's the money?
Right.
Oh, we gave it to so-and-so. He needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
If I might say, one of my favorite parts that I am proud of as our job sometimes is not to prevent things from happening, but to be a gatekeeper. And I take that very seriously. I think that's really important.
Shepherd.
But when you are getting someone who's not the person that has hired you, contacting someone, say, hey, send me money, do this or do that. Again, if it's mom or dad, those emotional levers, those strings may be pulled a little bit easier. But just to say, oh, great, they want a little money, have a meeting with us. Let's find out how and why, and then flesh some of that out and let mom and dad perhaps paint Tony as the bad guy.
Exactly.
I like to be the bad guy sometimes.
Yeah, you have to be.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But like you said, sometimes it's from inside, not even outside.
Yeah.
So what best practices can people put in place proactively before that even gets to that point?
So depending upon where you have your money, whether that's a bank account, whether that's an IRA with custodians, wherever that may be, you want to ask about, do you allow for a diminished capacity contact, basically a trusted contact? Everyone's a little different in how they label that, but and each form's a little different too in what they empower or enable you to do. But basically, if I were to get a call from Stephen, and Stephen's my client and he's perhaps not sounding the way Stephen normally sounds, maybe I can call Allison,
my trusted
your spouse, say, hey, let's talk, let's see. Is there something going on I don't know about? Well, by the way, he fell last week in the backyard, he hit his head.
Right.
That's real. That can happen.
And that's why I said bad financial decisions are made.
Right.
Right.
And it's not purposeful. It's not intentional sometimes.
It's medically.
But people can automate their bank accounts for bill pay, right? So having on the financial planning side, have your bills auto-paid. How do you protect people from getting access to large sums of money?
Well, the elder abuse is, again, you have to have trusted contacts. You have to have a support team. You know, as far as the fraud out from the outside, I've become very upset with society as far as the companies that are on the outside on how they ignore elder people. The elderly are just, it's like there's no more paper and pens. There's no, it's all digital. And I'm actually a little frustrated these last 2 years. I get amazed. I work with clients who are in their 80s and it's not a wonderful world for them.
Yeah.
Because they want, at best, they might do fax machines.
Yeah.
Right? That might be the most technology they're comfortable with. So you've really got to adapt. And that's what I'm teaching myself. I've got to stay on top of technology. I've really got to do this because you got to stay up to speed as much as possible.
Right.
If not, have somebody to help you with that. But, you know, having IDs and passwords, a secure password vault, don't use the same password. Make sure, you know, you're not clicking away and all these icons that are on the computer. It's terrible, but the older you get, the harder it gets too.
So, and having security, having someone help you put security in place on your email and so forth.
Yeah.
So being proactive on the tech side is what you're saying.
Technology can be your friend, but when you get older, it's not.
Yeah.
And this is where this is hopefully very helpful because what we haven't talked about and we barely brought up were trust. I mean, that's something I think you discuss with an attorney. There's a lot that you may give up. There may be a lot of cost. I think a lot of people are fearful about Medicare losing things to the government, maybe rightfully so in some cases, but that's not the end-all be-all we think in every situation. So when you speak with an attorney, really gauge, are they asking me my goal even? I mean, you shared that earlier, Tracy, a great interaction you had. I know I had one where I went in and they asked first, what was the goal? They didn't jump into how do we protect money? How do
that's
we shift
good,
this?
That's
or shift
a good
that?
Advisor right there.
So to be
right?
able to say this is what we wanted to have happen was a lot different than some of the other people we'd interviewed where they were just ready to jump to. Here's how we avoid this, avoid that. No, that's not what we're
What's
here
the goal?
For.
Or try to sell you CDs or something, a product that you don't need.
That also happens in some cases, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's kind of jack of all trades people.
Yeah. And the more you have, the harder it is. I mean, that's life too, right? That's you got to prepare. You've got to have a network. You've got to make sure that you got your ducks in a row. And it goes back to prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Is it a mistake? I mean, let's talk about bringing family into the conversation. And we talked about reviewing annually with your professionals. But at what point, if any, do you sit down with your family and say, this is what I've got going, this is what we have, this is what I want done?
Talk about it enough that it's a non-issue, right? Joke about it, too. That's the irony, is we talk about it so much. Death, disability—it's you're numb to it, but it could be a joke at the dinner table to know that, hey, you know, you're named in here, named in there, and the kids would be like, yeah. But then it's just easily said. That first time, I had a friend that said that when their dad said, "I have here where my estate documents are," they all panicked. What's wrong with you? And all they're freaking out. But he's like, no, everything's fine.
That's very common, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. Right. So he's like, no, everything's fine. But this is the attorney who has my documents, the estate documents. So, you know, if you it's communication, right? Start at the dinner table, maybe holiday season. I mean, just make some fun. Again, when times are good, it's a non-issue. It's a non-issue.
I'll paint the other side of that again. That's maybe which rightfully so, when you're doing it the right way. And I'll share for my family, my grandmother, and the opposite side of it, she had four children. She left monies to two children and two grandchildren. There wasn't a family meeting or discussion about that. We went through heartache for almost a decade in our family of why was that? You know, one was an airline captain doing well. One had already been given money during their lifespan. To her, it made sense. She explained it to one person in the family, and that was it.
Yeah.
So then everyone else is left kind of scrambling, wondering, why wasn't I? And the emotions came in more than the need for money or anything else. Mm-hmm. So the ability to have that family meeting or kind of just gather everyone or even leave a letter of instruction if you know it's so contentious you don't want to set it off while you're alive, but at least lay out, here was my logic too. Sometimes that can help for people who are left beyond.
It's funny, as I've gotten older, and especially as I've experienced this situation, it seems to me that we are obsessed with our things and our money, almost to the point of burying our head in the sand, and as such, are not thinking about the ramifications when we're gone, what that will look like. Emotionally,
but it's the same cause and effect. The same reason you're sticking the head in the sand is the same reason it's going to be a problem.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not going to be my problem.
Right. Not my problem. Yeah. Let them deal with it. And then you're creating two problems.
Yeah. I went through that with both parents. It's it was taboo to talk about.
Yep.
I was a jerk for bringing it up in my entire family, not just with my parents. Yeah. They did not like it. They did not appreciate it. It felt like I was trying to get something from them, and I was just trying to make sure everything
clear
was in place. They left me with a mess on both sides. So then the emotional aspect, I still feel the fracture emotionally of what that was like. It was absolute hell to go through both times.
But here's a good example. We're moving to estate plan, but diminished capacity, if you do have one child or somebody helping you, make sure everybody understands and that person who's responsible keep documentation. Transparency solves a lot of that headache.
Keep documentation
of transactions. If you're paying somebody's bills because they have a diminished capacity, and let's say you have multiple siblings, and you're the bookkeeper, save the documentation just to prove it, to say, here's where all the money went.
Yeah, right? Well, I can tell you it's never good enough.
No, it isn't, but it's a start.
I know you were hiding money.
We're telling a lot of stories here, but again, the reality of it. I mean, when I'm living there and helping my grandparents out and trying to get finances in order, they were very charitable. They were very generous. Right. So for others in the family to perhaps prying eyes go, you're giving how much to this or that? You're paying for this that's not even deductible. You're doing. That's what you don't necessarily want to deal with.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you're able to have that trusted contact or someone that can help you, you can still keep doing what you were doing, live your values, have your great retirement, even with a diminished capacity. But if you're not putting those things in place, you're setting yourself up for a mess.
Yeah.
And I think what we're saying is, if you don't like the kids, don't worry about this. Skip this episode.
Right. And now the other joke at the table is tell them that nobody's getting anything.
Right. That's a good one.
They're all getting zero.
I'm spending it all.
Plan it. Right. Yeah, exactly. You're spending it all. And then set the expectations low.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's for sure.
Why is that mandatory?
Right. No, it's really important.
No, I've said that a million times. Just because it was his doesn't mean it was ours.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. You'd like it to be, but it's not.
Wonderful if it happens that way, but that's not an entitled assumption. Yeah. Right? That's a mindset.
No.
So have we already kind of reviewed long-term needs enough, or do you want to go into long-term needs as far as diminished capacity is concerned and the long-term care planning specifically?
Yeah, go ahead.
Honestly, that could even be a whole nother show.
Right.
So I think the important part, maybe to bring it back another angle, we talked a lot about what if you're the caregiver, but on the other side, if you are that person that maybe you just got a diagnosis, you're really going through something, you just notice it. You wake up in the morning, you feel a little different.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to all of us. I mean, as you're going through that, that's the time, hopefully, to start to say, what do I have? Do I have documents? Who do I have? What people do I have access to? I mean, everyone's going to be different. And I hate to say it, but I saw it. When you're up there in your 90s, you're looking around. You don't have as many friends as what you used to have.
Yeah.
Those kids might be in their 60s or 70s. I mean, who is there that's going to be able to help? And to always rely on family is not always right either. People move. People may not. They have their own families. So to have a plan, whether it's a friend that you've talked to, neighbors, I don't know. Everyone has to have their own plan. But to do it while you can think about it, while you have your druthers about you, while you're able to, that's really important. Otherwise, someone else is going to make all of those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what it'll come down to is, who's got a bed open? Who will take that?
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part that you really don't want to be in. And hopefully, if you're doing this diminished capacity stuff right, you're avoiding that.
Yeah, and then lastly is we always stress that both parties, if there's a couple, right, both parties are included in the meetings and understand their financial plan. That's again the double tragedy is when one spouse has not ignored, they weren't interested in finance.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. That's the worst is when you encounter that scenario and now they're in charge of all the bank accounts and all the bills and they don't really understand money or want to understand money. That's very hard, very challenging. Here you are probably in your later years, whatever decade, 60s, 70s, 80s, and you're now responsible for the finances of the household.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge responsibility,
right.
And it's not for everybody, right?
Right?
But so that's the importance of educating yourself on the finances of the household.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
And even more so those in their 90s, too.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you're right. We keep living longer and being a little healthier. That's what happens as a side effect. So this is really important and is only going to be more important.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Thank you. Takeaway is plan ahead, build your support network, get the professionals in line. We can help with that. If you're interested in a complimentary consultation to discuss this situation about your financial household, we're happy to sit down and go over it with you. Give us a call. We're happy to help. We're glad you tuned in. We hope you'll come back as usual. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.